I'm Bill Teeple, and I'm here with Alan Cobb and Donna Colby, and this is Icon Art Radio. And this is Icon Art Radio 101. That is, this is our 101st show. We're starting the new century of shows. It's hard to believe we've been on the air.
It's hard to believe we've had that much to talk about, isn't it?
I know, and probably the audience out there is also thinking the same thing.
Here they go.
Shut up.
Maybe some debate.
I think the problem, though, with Alan and Don and I is that we, each of us, could talk on and on forever about all the stuff we love about life and art. Well, something happened this morning, some event.
Well, no, I was just reading something that really struck me. You know how I don't know if you do, but I read during my breakfast, and usually it's just some interesting thing, and I learn something from time to time. But occasionally, I'll read something that will really strike me, and today was one of those times. And it was in this book. The author was talking about how we can get hung up on agreement and that it can actually be an unhealthy thing to be hung up on finding people who agree with us on our perspectives on life and all of that, forming friendships because we agree on everything. And he went on to talk about how that's what creates totalitarian states and fundamentalist religions and all of that, when people put agreement as a very high value in their lives. And what the reason why it hit me so strongly is that for much of my life, I've been looking for what I called kindred spirits. And kindred spirits basically were people who were just like me. And I would make friends with somebody, and they would seem like they were a kindred spirit, and then suddenly they would do something that was completely out of my expectation, and I would think, oh, darn, they're not really a kindred spirit after all, and, you know, because there was some ideal in my mind that if people could just agree on everything, we'd all get along really well. My mother would kind of put it, she and her friend would get together and say, well, if we ran the world, you know, there wouldn't be any problems. And so this man in this book was talking about how unhealthy that is, for how if you want to have unity in a political system or in spiritual life or even in a family, it can't possibly be based on agreement because no two people are ever going to agree on absolutely everything. And what people tend to, even people who talk about unity and harmony, they generally tend to say, if those people only believed in unity and harmony like we do, we'd be better off. Not realizing that right at that very moment, they're creating a division and a separation between themselves and those people. So anyway, it just got me thinking about that whole situation in life on all levels, and especially right now when we're facing the new administration and Obama is going to be inaugurated very soon, and the whole hope is that the world will become more harmonious through that accepting of crossing, you know, to the other side of the aisle and all of that. So I thought that would be an interesting thing to talk about, just our own relationship to that theme.
Well, we're all...
are you all in agreement with me?
Yeah, I totally disagree.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, do it. Well, I come out of a pathologically sick family relationship where everyone had to agree, mm-hmm. or there was a serious problem. So I emerged from that by meeting my first wife, whose family was completely the opposite, and so I needed that very much. These are people that like almost had, an argument every day and stomping out kind of situation, which to me was very relieving. In fact, I even found that I could like even get out my feelings and say what I thought without feeling all guilty that we didn't all agree on everything. So that's been one of my biggest lessons, is getting out of that situation. I think it's very poignant and important today that we're at this point where there's an ideology rising that has to do with unity, and that we're all in this together and we all have to work together. I think what makes a beautiful painting, bringing this back to art, which is our area of concern, is that a painting is a harmony of differences. We could have a blank white canvas, which would talk about the underlying consciousness or the underlying field that that diversity happens in, but it's what makes the canvas beautiful and the art beautiful is diversity. So in the world, we've witnessed partisan politics to the in the canvas of life. We've watched the parts of the canvas, of the painting, at odds with each other, blaming the other side for everything that's wrong. And that hasn't worked. And that only creates this a gridlock of nothing happening and no fulfillment. But I think there's a sign that maybe we can move towards people appreciating differences. It's been very hard for me to watch this in the recent election cycle, the Republicans and the Democrats going at each other, and it's like warfare. And you've got to have two sides to any story. Everything is going to have two sides to it, two opposing sides that make a dynamic that makes the whole. And each side has to cherish the position of the other side, because it makes your side stronger as you establish your reasoning and your foothold and where you're coming from against that opposing way of seeing things. But you're always going to have two sides to things.
Well, that's the point. Yeah, you have, like, because everyone is always going to have a different opinion about whatever. And the point, one of the points in this book I was reading was that if you base your relationships with other people, whether it's a political association or a friendship or marriage relationship or whatever, if you base it on agreement, we hold the same views on everything, then what you're naturally going to wind up doing is finding some common enemy. And groups of people do this all the time. I mean, you have the extreme examples of this sort of thing would be something like genocide, where a culture completely wants to wipe out another group of people because they're different from them. But even on some smaller level, in the lunchroom in school, when you say those kids can't sit at our table because they've got cooties or something like that, you know, there's all sorts of ways that we band together with people we agree with to shut out somebody else. So I thought it was an important point to see how we need to embrace people who we disagree with without agreeing with them, without trying to get them to accept our view entirely or try to accept their view entirely, but just to respect it and understand it and see their right to be who they are and our right to be who we are. And it gets very complex. When you start really thinking about this on a practical level, it can get very sticky and complex, you know, when you think of actual scenarios, like how do you do that? But that's the only direction that could ultimately work, and I think that's the direction that we're sort of feeling happening in the world today and in our
Well, I think it's a fine razor's edge, and I'm waiting to see how it's going to go.
Right,
I'm highly optimistic and encouraged.
Yeah, that alone is really a big change for me. It's been a long time since I've thought that there was actually a possibility of the leadership leading in a responsible and beneficial manner.
And the fact that as he's leading, he is always saying, it's not me, it's you.
Yes, and bringing because everyone, that's really what it is.
And that's what we're all, why we're all feeling that we're kind of all friends now. Us and people in government and...
Well, I think we have to face this issue because you just look at a little bit of cable news and you realize how small the world is now. Everybody knows what everybody else is doing. Mm-hmm. All the issues are being debated everywhere, all over the globe. Culture is getting definitely melted together. And it's still made up of all these diverse peoples with all different ways of looking at things. The huge gamut of ways of seeing the world, all put together in one way. I mean, we can't avoid the one world concept and that we're all one big family at this point. So we're going to have to learn how to accept each other's differences. We're at that point. Mm-hmm. We can't have this chauvinistic, closed, nationalist kind of thinking that dominated for so long.
Yeah. And the whole planet really is like a baby learning to walk again. You know, it's like a whole new way of functioning. and all of these things that are happening with the economy and everything else are just one little wake-up call after. And the environment and everything, there are all these wake-up calls that we have to learn how to walk a new way as a whole world, as a whole planet. And that's exciting. And again, you know, going back to our last show when we were talking about the blank slate giving rise to new creativity, that's what's happening in our world too, is that we have to step back from the clutter of old thinking and the tangle that so many people have been caught up in accepting things and thinking that they were inevitable. We have to break free of that before we can find a new way, and that takes patience and real openness. And where I think we're at a point right now where we're kind of waiting to see whether we're capable of doing that as a global world group of people.
Well, I think there really is no choice. We either have to get it or else. But some people are going to go into this new way kicking and screaming because they want the old opposition, living in separation and opposition and finding fault with others. Mm-hmm. But that's a way of the past.
Yeah. And relating it to art, since our show is Icon Art Radio, what we're going toward is a new art of living that involves every single aspect of life. And all of these big, huge problems are all boiled down to little tiny situations. How we live our lives every single day as an individual affects the environment, it affects the economy, it affects our relation with other countries in the world by the way we shop, and all of these things. I think that's one thing that if we are following the news in a broad way, we're discovering how much we haven't known, how much we've kept our blinders on, not because we wanted to be narrow-minded, but just because we didn't know any better. And gradually we're learning enough so that we can see that every time we make one little action in our home, it has an impact bigger than that tiny little thing that we...
I think we can no longer ignore the global effects of our individual small acts within our home.
And there's something exciting about feeling that sense of responsibility, as well as, you know, some hope for a better world. That's one thing that Obama made us feel during the campaign, was that he couldn't do it alone, and so everybody had to take responsibility to make the country better. And in our, you know, in the 70s and the 80s, we had a very me-oriented culture where everyone was looking out for their own particular interests and making sure they got a big enough piece of the pie and all of that. And the fact that we're not really able to think that way anymore and have everything work is, like you were saying a few minutes ago, painful to some people, but a kind of great feeling to other people that yeah, it feels good to take on a bigger responsibility and actually think that you can make a difference.
I find that my work is changing too, as this sensation of new possibilities sinks in. It's ironic that there should be such economic turmoil and hardship at the same time that we all get the feeling that we could be really starting something much, much more effective than what we've been doing recently. But I guess, you know, my response to it is informed more by the feeling of hopefulness than by the feeling of hopelessness. And the projects that I find I'm working on are more ambitious, more long-term. They have more depth. They're, in some cases, more practical. But it's an energy that's affecting my, you know, my creative output in a very, very noticeable way.
Well, I think it can all have a very profound and important effect on what we call the art world. Mm-hmm. The art world began to be totally dominated, I mean, not totally, the art world became highly dominated by monetary factors and investments and people playing with the market of art just to enrich themselves. It's very parallel to what's happened in markets in general, people thinking about how they can work with the numbers and work with the markets to enrich themselves to the maximum. And that's been happening in art, in art investments, to the point that we've had artists that have even made that playground the subject of their art. Mm-hmm. I think that we have to I think that we're in a point of rethinking everything. And we have to rethink what is actually true and meaningful for human beings to be living life together on this planet. And I think it's a new era for creative expression. And we know, because we've been saying it for a long time, that ICON, being non-profit and non-commercial, is oriented towards locating what pure creativity is all about and why do we want to even be creative in the first place and what can we do with this creativity. We're asking the questions, and I think that the larger art world is going to be asking these questions more as a result of the cultural situation today.
Yeah, and it has to, that question has to go back, all the way back to the ultimate question of what is art? What is the purpose of...
Which we won't, we've been talking about. Which is the 101st show. Mm-hmm. This is Art 101, and that is always what we come back to. So
yeah.
We'll set that again as our subject of interest. But you can't stop it. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you can define it or name it, you can't stop it. Mm. The world will continue to be creative.
Now, that's, you've just hit it, I think, the fact that that question, what is art, is ultimately a question that can't be answered or shouldn't be answered. Because it's sort of like the Zen question that, you know, Zen monks meditate on, which is just simply, what is this? And it's a question that's to take you in a direction and not to actually be answered. And so the question of what is art is, I think, the same kind of a question, that it takes you to some place, and anybody who has the audacity to actually answer the question with a statement is somehow making art small.
Well, it's what's led me, as I've said before, to want to take the word art out of the equation, because mm-hmm. it's going to continue to be creative. It, with a capital I, mm-hmm. is going to continue to be creative, because creative intelligence is what's operating here.
Right.
And so this concept of art, and what is that, and am I one of those, or am I not one of those, or its importance in all of this, really is irrelevant to the fact that the world and each individual is going to continue to move forward in time and space and be creative mm-hmm. to various degrees, depending on how they apply their intelligence. How meaningful, or how, I think we want to bring back to Earth the what we're calling the art world, which has to do with packaging and moving around these creative activities of people called artists. It's sort of gotten disengaged in many ways from the practicalities of life itself. And so maybe we need to just sort of like let it go off into space, disengaged, and go off into space, and let's reinvent from the baseline being creative together and have it be meaningful in the context of all of us living life together on this globe.
Yeah, because that's another form of unity. Instead of separating art from other aspects of life,
it's just another kind of language. I mean, so we can say in words, we're all one, and we have to learn to get together, and we have to appreciate our diversity and our differences and see the beauty of differences. And then through painting and sculpture and poetry, hopefully we can say the same thing in a way that connects even deeper with our hearts and minds. And that's all it is. These things that we make and we put up in the art galleries are ways of describing what it is to exist together mm-hmm. and how can we declare our unity and our love together for this thing that we're in. And how can we make it work? And ways, I mean, these things are also vehicles to help us figure out ways to make it work, because we want it to work, except for those people who are part of the beautiful diversity that don't want things to work. And we have to accept that there's going to be people in this great diversity of things that don't want things to work. And we have to figure out how to incorporate them into the mm-hmm. equation also.
Well, and when you were talking about works of art that actually unite people and open them up and expand them and all, those are actually the works of art that have lasted through the centuries as masterworks of art. You know, for and often they can't be defined. You know, people will look and not know why, when you stand in front of that particular statue, your heart melts and you feel like hugging the person, the stranger who's standing next to you in the museum. You don't know why, but somehow that artist brought that out from that particular piece of art. And hordes of people will line up for hours to see those works of art because it makes them feel that way and helps them expand and see things they didn't see before.
And that person that created that was just adamant about trying to get his or her cognition of how it is and what it is mm-hmm. and what they love about it into some kind of material form. Yeah. And these people tend to be less and less interested in their position in life and more interested in what people think of them and more interested in this dialogue taking place and almost a obsessive dialogue with their medium that they're struggling with to make this statement.
And there are all the anonymous artists who created statues of Buddha or the Madonna or whatever, you know, all of these figures that you see in sacred places all around the world, and they never put their names on it. We don't know who made those things, but very obviously there was this relationship with the material and the spirit and all that in the creation of these objects, and they become alive in a sense, you know, that you hundreds or thousands of people will have moving experiences in the presence of these creations.
And those truths mm-hmm. that are embodied mm-hmm. carry through time. Like it's a battery that holds a cognition of truth.
Mm-hmm. What you were saying about agreeing at the beginning of the show is really almost the antithesis of what really brings people together. Mm-hmm. Because it's only through seeing the diversity that you can understand what people are. And as you see more and more examples of different kinds of people and different kinds of sensibilities, especially through their works as artists, if they happen to be artists, you begin to see what is really common behind all of that art, behind all of that diversity. And you realize that what we all have in common is indescribable, and that it's the fountainhead of the diversity. So there's no reason to resist or fear the diversity. Just celebrate it and see it as a manifestation of something magical that lies underneath it.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.